That was a great blessing. I enjoyed all the music here this morning. And now if you have your Bibles, I invite you to turn to Proverbs chapter 14. Proverbs chapter 14. And thank you for making this a special day. And I'm so glad I am in church. I ditto there what Brother McKinney said there. I'm glad to be an American. I'm mostly glad to be a Christian here this morning and to be with God's people, with God's book, in God's house. What could be better here on this Independence Day? I'm going to have you remain seated as we come to our text verses. You know, we've been going through topically here the book of Proverbs this morning. I come to this very unique title, Making the Statue of Liberty Disappear. And I know you're wondering about that, but let's notice the verse that I base this on in Proverbs 14 and verse number 34. Of course, the Bible says, righteousness exalteth a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. You know, happy Independence Day. This is a special day. It's an important day. Perhaps if I can even say it this way, maybe this is the most important Independence Day since that original one back in 1776. You know, I happen to think that as we've been studying the book of Proverbs, that there's an overlooked word. And it's a word that, well, you're probably only going to be hearing it in church because you're not going to be hearing it in the media. You're certainly not going to be hearing it out there. Most people are not going to use it. But it's the word righteousness. And you know, righteousness is important to God. Therefore, I chose here this title, Making the Statue of Liberty Disappear, of course referring to a famous allusion that took place back on April the 8th, 1983. David Copperfield, you know, all magicians, they have their signature act. Whether it be a Harry Houdini who got out of the straitjacket, or you take, for instance, Chris Angel walking on the water, even David Blaine's holding his breath underwater for 17 minutes. But the most famous illusion that David Copperfield probably ever conducted took place when he, on April the 8th, 1983, had 20 tourists that assembled on what's called Liberty Island, looking directly at the Statue of Liberty. And he placed between two pillars a curtain. And he said, now, here you see the Statue of Liberty, but I'm going to raise the curtain. And when I lower the curtain, you are going to see the Statue of Liberty disappear. And sure enough, the curtain was raised, but then it was lowered, and they did not see. Now, it was an illusion. But I want to just simply even give you the words, because I thought it very interesting that David Copperfield said, here's the moral, or here's the lesson. He said, I wanted to show how precious liberty is and how easily it can be lost. I can show with magic how we take our freedom for granted. He said, so I asked our government for permission to make the Statue of Liberty disappear just for a few minutes. Of course, it was a trick, it was an illusion. But I'm here today because I'm concerned about liberty disappearing. Not an illusion, not a trick, not a magician's act, but I'm concerned about our liberty. After all, what word is more important to our country than that word liberty? And it's a word that our country is rooted in. It's a word that sets us apart. For instance, we've got our national symbols, like we mentioned, the Statue of Liberty or the Liberty Bell. Or how about songs like My Country Tis of Thee, Sweet Land of Liberty? The preamble to the Constitution begins with three important words, we the people, which sets us apart from other nations that have powerful rulers, powerful kings and monarchs, and yet our country is ruled by the people. We govern ourselves. It is literally, we do not derive everything from Congress or from a Supreme Court or anybody else. But we, the people, grant the authority for others to represent us. And you have to understand that in 1776, that our forefathers, when they began that this experiment that has lasted now 245 years, they began here with trying to get rid of the shackles, the restraints of tyranny from another country, Great Britain. You know, we made it very obvious that we didn't want to have power just simply resting in one branch. Well, we had three branches, and we even have the elections and elections that are consequential. Now, what do we know about liberty? We know that the Constitution, the preamble to the Constitution says this, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and get this, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. You know, I know that not everybody is, you know, keen about saying the Pledge of Allegiance. I am. But our Pledge of Allegiance ends with the words, with liberty and justice for all. The Declaration of Independence says that we were all created equal by our Creator. We were endowed with certain unalienable rights, that among them are these, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Why am I saying all of this? I'm saying that listen, I think that maybe we have taken for granted liberty. You know, there's all sorts of freedoms. You know, we sometimes, you know, realize that certain freedoms are infringed upon, and certain individuals or certain businesses or certain churches, or for instance, might lose a freedom here or there. That we are concerned about the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, the freedom of press, the freedom to defend ourselves, the Second Amendment. You know, so many of these freedoms. But think about it, even in terms of a little bit more than just that. Because there are so many freedoms that we enjoy today. You know, I just list three here this morning before we continue. For instance, I thought about this. How about the freedom to a fair and also a speedy trial? I was reading here recently about a 33-year-old basketball player who found himself playing an exhibition basketball game in China. When he was on the street, just simply happened across, it seemed like a confrontation, a lady was being accosted by another man, and so he went over to just simply do the chivalrous thing, and he went over and he shoved the man. That caused him to be arrested without charges and without a trial for some 80 days. He was literally contained, and again, an American citizen. He was contained, he was put in a little cell that just simply had a table, a chair, and an old mattress. He was fed bug-infested rice. And for 80 days, he was locked up. Charges were not even found. There wasn't any trial, and then all of a sudden he was released. Aren't you glad, by the way, you don't live in China? Folks, we don't realize what we have. How about the freedom to travel? How would you like to live, for instance, in North Korea? Freedom of movement in North Korea is limited. It's determined by the leader, Kim Jong-un. Citizens are not allowed to move freely around. I've been reading here recently a book. It's the autobiography of this 27-year-old North Korean defector who escaped North Korea, came to the United States, graduated from high school, went away to one of our prestigious Ivy League colleges only to hear the same Marxism that she had heard back in North Korea. And she said, I left that. Why is that here? Anti-Americanism in the college that she was attending. Now, I'm thankful, by the way, that I happen to live in a country where if I want to, I can get in a car and I can travel by car, or I can purchase a plane ticket and I can fly anywhere within our country. I'm glad I live in a country where I have a U.S. passport. How valuable that thing is. Every time I hold that passport, I realize there are people from all over the world would love to have this. I can travel and travel freely. How about the freedom to own property? You know, under Marxism, private property is not allowed. The state owns everything, and we are seeing Marxism creep in. You know, I thought about it recently when I was actually driving this week here through Minneapolis, and we had the group, and by the way, it's been just a momentous week here. We had tour group last Sunday, tour group on Wednesday. The group on Wednesday, I said, hey, you want to go see Minneapolis? And so we went Brother Sean, we went downtown Minneapolis and we drove past where, you know, the George Floyd Square was. But we were traveling downtown there on Lake Street and we were seeing business after business. Now get this, those businesses there in Minneapolis, that they oftentimes on a daily basis just about are having vandalism, and people at night, they're writing and putting graffiti on their buildings. And get this, recently it was announced that what is happening is those businesses, that they are being visited by the city officials who are telling them, now listen, you can't have the graffiti on the walls, so therefore you have so much time to clean it up. If you do not clean it up, we will have our city crews clean it up. We'll go ahead and then charge you, and you're going to have to pay for us cleaning up the graffiti somebody else put on your building. And some of the businesses are having a hard time keeping up with this, and they're having to pay for it. Now, let me get this straight. So we live in a state and in an area where we have proposed defunding the police, so we have less police to police the streets, and then even those that protest or vandalize, oftentimes, they're not even being charged or charges are dropped. And yet we are actually putting the onus, we're putting the burden on the businesses that have nothing to do with all of this, that are just simply trying to operate. I say, listen, something's wrong here in our country. That should not be. You see, if we don't hang on to our freedoms, we will lose them. I came across a very eloquent quote that I want to share with you from 19th century Christian statesman Daniel Webster. He was a congressman. He also, for a while there, served as Secretary of State. He said these words prophetically. He said, "Hold on, my friends, to the Constitution and to the Republic for which it stands. Miracles do not cluster, and what has happened once in 6,000 years may never happen again." He said, "Hold on to the Constitution, for if the American Constitution should ever fail, there will be anarchy throughout the world." I would just simply add, I think it is here. What does the Bible say? Righteousness exalteth a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. We notice five things from this one verse. First of all, notice the righteousness of a nation. As I said, that the word righteousness is not a word that is spoken out there in society. That they use a lot of other words, but they do not use that word. And yet that word is so important in God's thinking. What is righteousness? There's actually two. Righteousness means being right, but there's two kinds. There's what is called imputed righteousness. That's the righteousness for salvation. What is that? Well, that is a righteousness that only one has ever attained, and that is Jesus Christ. Therefore, you and I, we are not righteous. We will never be good enough in God's standards. So therefore, if you will even allow me to say it, it's not exactly this way, but it's sort of like we need to borrow His righteousness or have His righteousness on our account. You know, I remember growing up, my mom would oftentimes, we lived in one of those neighborhoods where the neighbors all looked after each other. And it was not uncommon for my mom to tell me, "Dave, listen, I'm baking a cake, but I'm short of some flour. I'm short of some sugar." And she'd always tell me this, "Now you just simply go next door and you borrow, tell the neighbor over here." And we had neighbors on either side that would be free, and my mom as well. Sometimes we'd have the neighbor kids come over and say, "My mom is asking to borrow a cup of sugar, a cup of flour, borrow, you know, some baking soda, baking powder." And so we would borrow some of the ingredients, loan them to each other back and forth. That was just simply the way that we neighborly did some things back in those days. You know what? I'm so glad when it comes to salvation that God says, "Listen, you can borrow from my righteousness." And that's exactly what Jesus Christ did. Jesus Christ established the righteous standard, and He lived on this earth for 33 years. He died, He bled, He shed His blood. He died in our place, so that salvation is as simple as this. It is believing and appropriating Jesus Christ and saying, "That is what is going to stand before me." Why should God let you into heaven? Because of Jesus, not because of you. Somebody says, "Well, I'm good." Well, you're not good enough. for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. There's imputed righteousness, but then there's also practical righteousness. Righteousness that may be individual or, as I believe in this particular verse, a national righteousness. When it says that righteousness exalteth the nation, it's speaking about just overall the righteousness existing in that one nation. Now, obviously, this particular verse in context was spoken by Solomon, and it was spoken with Israel in mind. After all, Israel has been, always will be, God's chosen nation. The nation that gave us the Bible, the nation that gave us the nation of Israel, the land, and most importantly, the book and the Savior. And so that nation righteousness certainly would exalt Israel, but that principle also applies to everybody else. You know, I happen to believe that, you know, righteousness needs to be the desire of every nation upon the face of this earth. Now, again, not our righteousness. You know, you ask the average person, you know, are you right? And they'll say yes. But it's not our standard that's important. It's God's. You know, I found it very alarming. I don't know if you heard about this, but recently in the state of Mississippi, there was a group of atheists that were suing the state government. And simply because the state government had established license plates in Mississippi that have four offensive words to atheists. Four offensive words. And they said, we don't want, now by the way, they had the right if they wanted to get a different license plate, but the standard license plate in Mississippi has four offensive words. You know what those words are? In God we trust. Offensive? Why? That has been our national motto since 1956. That, by the way, appears, you know, on our currency. That is a phrase. And by the way, we need to realize, you know, if we start taking away phrases, slogans, what I'm concerned about is also the fact that we are taking away righteousness. Righteousness, we notice the righteousness of a nation. Then secondly, notice the reward of such a nation. It says, righteousness exalteth a nation. Exalteth. You realize in the Bible there are many times where individuals and nations succeeded, but those nations never succeeded without God's hand. You know, you take one example, Nebuchadnezzar and the kingdom of Babylon, and we even know that story in the book of Daniel where Nebuchadnezzar gets to the point where he's proud and he's like a peacock and he's strutting around on top of his palace walls and he's saying these words. He said, looks out and says, is not this great Babylon that I have built? And at that point there, God had had enough. He'd already warned him. And God humbled him in a second. God caused him to drop to his hands and his knees in a posture not only that reminds us here of an animal, but it is also a posture of worship. And he drops and becomes a beast for 7 years. Now, why is that important? I'll tell you why that's important. You and I, we must never think that we built it alone or we did it without. We didn't do anything without God's hand. And the problem is that people look at America and say, what a great nation. They don't realize God blessed America. By the way, I would even just historically even point to the fact, you know, those that fought that Revolutionary War, it's a very important point, but 30 years prior, you know what took place 30 years before the Revolutionary War? There was a revival. A revival called the First Great Awakening. And when John Wesley and George Whitefield and men like Jonathan Edwards were preaching his sermon, for instance, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, people were getting saved, churches were being filled, and the moral character of a nation, so that 30 years later, no wonder, by the way, and again, I argue with people about this, but no wonder when you read the Founding Fathers, what do you hear? God, Creator. They looked to a sovereign. And they did not acknowledge that they did it without his help. They acknowledged they did it with his hand. What does it mean, by the way, to be exalted? I believe it means three things. First of all, an exalted nation is set apart. One of the meanings of the word exalt means to be lifted up, to be made high, to be exalted. The Bible teaches that God Himself is exalted. So therefore, anytime we exalt God, we will be exalted with Him. Not without Him, but with Him. Israel is one nation that God chose to exalt above others. Anytime you find a nation exalting God, that nation exalts itself with God's hand. Who can argue, by the way, that the United States has been exceptional, especially in these last 100 years, and you know, just simply the inventions, just simply the prosperity, the envy of the... Do you know why, by the way, that you have people that are trying to flood into this country every single day? It's because they want to get to a better country, that they want to get to a freer country, they want to get to a more prosperous country, that they're not coming here because America is worse, they're coming here because America has been exalted. Not only that, but the word exalted means an exalted nation is safe. Another sub-meaning of the word exalt is to raise high, to be out of the reach of danger. There's a reason why the ancient cities were all built on hills, mountains. They were built in cliffs. Jerusalem, as an example, was settled on Mount Zion. Psalm 32, verse 7 says, "Thou art my hiding place. Thou shalt preserve me from trouble. Thou shalt compass me about with songs of deliverance, Selah." Now, I want to ask this question. Are we safe today or safer? Now, you can answer that. But I would argue, if you say no, why? It corresponds, God's blessing equals safety. You take away God's blessing, you will be unsafe. An exalted nation also is strong. Another shading of the word exalted means to triumph over enemies or foes, whether economically or military. Again, I ask this question, is America strong or is America weak? Is America getting stronger or is America waning? Again, you can answer the question, but I will point to you again. All that matters to me is what God says. And what God says is He exalts those who exalt His word. Joshua 1:8, "This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein." Listen to this, "For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success." For over 200 years, America has become the gold standard, not because of America, but because of God. The prosperity in our country, you know, for the longest time, it concerns me. I'm concerned about liberty. I'm concerned about God removing His hand from our nation. You know, one time, for instance, educationally, you realize that America used to be at the very top of the heap concerning education. Math, we were always number one for years and years. When I was a kid, we were number one. You know where America is today? America has slid not down a couple of spots, but recently it was announced that America is number 31 out of 79 nations. We have dropped that far in math. And by the way, not just simply math, but you take every other subject. Again, we need to realize that there was a day when it was said that America has never lost a conflict, a war. American exceptionalism was the standard. The American dream was something sought after. The reward of any nation that exalts God is that God conversely exalts that nation. Righteousness exalteth the nation. What else do we notice in this verse? We notice the revolt of a nation. Unfortunately, the verse does not end with the exaltation, but it goes on with those two words that change it all, but sin. As surely as righteousness exalteth a nation, sin will destroy it. This verse, by the way, is what we call a couplet. It has two parts, parts that are opposite and contrasting. One part cannot be accepted without the other. What can't be accepted is that sin is a reproach. It is a reproach. Why is that? Because God is a holy God. America can change your culture, but America can never change God's character. God's character is unchanging, and His holiness is unchanging. I'm not going to spend a lot of time to point out this, except to just simply state to you the obvious, and that is that we've been changing incrementally year after year. And just even look at the attitude, society, the covetousness. Notice the division. I've never seen a time in my lifetime that America has been less united and more divided than today. Much of America has turned from the fear of God. There is no fear of God. Instead, has embraced sin and a sinful lifestyle. It ought to break our hearts. It does break God's heart. But that brings me to number four. Notice the reproach of a nation. Notice this verse says, but sin is a reproach to any people. What does that word reproach mean? The word reproach has three shaded meanings. All three apply here. First of all, it can mean disgrace, to be brought low. Secondly, it can mean to be dishonored, to be ridiculed, to be laughed at. And third, it can mean to be defeated, to be overcome. One of the saddest things in my experience is to see how that patriotism, love for country, has been turned on its head. And again, we are living in reproach. Now, if that's what you are feeling, if you are feeling frustrated, realize that this is not the first time a nation has been seen reproach. Because the nation of Israel faced it. For instance, one of the places, many of you recall the story in the Bible of a little town called Ai. Ai was just simply a little dot on the map. It wasn't much. In fact, Joshua and the people, after battling Jericho, after battling the big city with the big walls, they came to Ai and they said, this is just a puny little town. We don't even need to send the whole army. Let's just send a few. And by the way, we don't have to worry about praying about this. We've got this. We can do this on our own. What happened? They lost. What happened? They were defeated. What happened? They were ridiculed. They were mocked. They faced reproach. Again, God's word is always true. We may try and change it, but the recipe always works the same way. Sin is a reproach to any people. Well, that brings us to number five, the remedy of a sinful nation. Because God actually gave Solomon the remedy. Not only does this proverb explain that righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people, but the remedy is given to Solomon, and it's given in a different place. Solomon was the one who built the temple. And at the dedication of the temple, he got before God, sacrificed, prayed, and God said some things to him at that time. We read in 2 Chronicles 7:14 on that occasion that God says, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, will forgive their sin, and will heal their land. What must we do? We've got to humble ourselves. Folks, this is the time here where pride has to be let go. This is the time where we need to humble. And by the way, if we humble ourselves, what will we be doing? Praying. You know why we don't pray as we ought to? Because we're too proud. Because we're too self-sufficient. Because we just assume things. We just simply wait. It's sort of like, you know, we wake up every day and we walk out to the car, we put the key in the car, we turn the ignition on, and it just starts. Why? Because it always, have you ever gone out to the car and it didn't start? You were shocked. Like, my car always starts. Didn't start this time. I wonder if we don't presume on God every single day. We need to humble ourselves. We need to pray. We need to seek His face. And by the way, as we are doing that, we will turn from our wicked ways. Again, America is in the condition we're in. And I don't mean to just simply be a doom and gloom preacher, because I happen to believe that there's a chance, if God's people will get a hold of this. Notice, by the way, it says, if my people, I believe we are at a crossroads. I happen to believe that David Copperfield, standing before a group of people saying, listen, I'm going to make the Statue of Liberty disappear, isn't as concerning to me as the fact that literally we are seeing our liberties evaporating and shrinking and going away from us little by little by little, and yet it seems like nobody cares. I close with this humor story. Reminds me of the story of a young man who wished to marry the farmer's beautiful daughter. And the farmer, very clever, very sly, said, "Well, listen, son, I don't know if you know I should do this, but I'll tell you, I'll let you marry my daughter under one condition. And that is, I'm gonna be on the other side of this gate, and I've got three bulls, and I'm gonna let them out one at a time. And if you can grab the tail of a bull, then you're man enough, and I'll just consider you're going to be my son-in-law. You can marry my daughter." And so the boy thought, well, that's a deal. And so he waited on the other side of the gate, and all of a sudden the farmer released the first bull, and this bull came out, and boy, he was big, and he was snorting. He was fit to be tied. And boy, he was so big, and that boy said, "I think I'll wait for bull number two." Not that one. Bull number two came, and boy, he thought, you know, if the first one was big and the first one was ornery, the second one more. He thought, there's no way I can get this one. And so finally, it came down to bull number three. And all of a sudden, the gate opened, and this was the scrawniest bull. This was the bull. And he thought, I've got it. And so he positioned himself just right, and he leaped for the back of the bull at just the right time and came up empty. You know what he found? The third bull had no tail. There was nothing to grab. Now, why do I tell that story? I'll tell you why I tell that story. Because what it teaches us is this: though things may seem difficult, opportunities come and opportunities pass. And eventually there gets to be a point where there's nothing left to grab. You know, I wonder if maybe that's where we're at. We're there. And we look out there and we see this challenge. And the challenge we face is both personally with our families, with our church. This has been, you know, I would tell you from a pastor standpoint, this has been a challenging time to be a pastor. It's been a challenging time to live. But listen, the opportunity may seem to be hard. But listen, with our God, we need to grab a hold of our liberties and hang on. We need to do what God says. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray, and turn, seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. Again, I'm not so concerned about an illusion of a statue disappearing, but I am concerned about our liberties. That is what America is based upon. What has made America distinct from every other nation is there's no other place you can go where you have the freedoms. Folks, we'll either keep them or we will lose them forever. Therefore, I say, let's care. Let's care enough to pray. Let's have every head bowed and every eye closed. Making the Statue of Liberty disappear, making our liberties go away. I believe that we are in a battle today like never before. Do you care about your country? Have you prayed? Have you been just simply, you know, I can tell you this, you know, you can watch, you know, the shows and you can listen to the talk radio and you can be concerned and you can fret. But listen, have you actually voiced prayers? Have you prayed? Have you prayed for leaders? Have you prayed for your family? Have you prayed for America? Have you prayed for our nation? And listen, do you value freedoms? Do you, today, I say to you, enjoy Independence Day. It's not just simply a holiday. It's a holiday that back yonder, some people fought very hard and shed their blood for. You know, I'm glad that I'm twice free. I'm free as an American, but I'm also free because I'm a Christian. And back 2,000 years ago, somebody paid a price for my freedom. Do you know Christ as Savior? Are you saved? Have you trusted Him? If not, I encourage you to do that. Maybe you need to come this morning. Maybe you need to even come and just pray for your country. Maybe it's been a long time since you uttered a prayer and said, God, bless America. You realize, by the way, that song is a prayer. I love that song. I love that prayer. God bless America. Let's all stand, and as Valerie plays, you stand.